Welcome everyone to the Film Vault. That is Anderson. I'm Rivers, your host for today. We're going to flick fest the new John Cho movie. Don't make me go. Friend of the show, John Cho.
Don't make me go is what you said, because the mouse already died.
Mouse is DOA, buddy. I'm sorry about that. Antiviral assigned to us, and of course, assigned to you, and I guess me, Beavis and Butthead do the universe. Are you excited?
About
the show, about seeing your old friend me.
Yes, I'm always excited to get the opportunity to talk into a microphone about things that I find near and dear in my heart, Brad.
I already tuned out. I'm sorry. Say it again.
We got three different movies, as is the case.
Indeed.
More often the case than not on this here program. We cover very, very different movies, a lot of ground, and hopefully we have something for everybody.
This is an especially wide distribution across the film spectrum.
Well, I mean, that was the case last week, too, I think.
Was it? Let me recount.
Last week, we did Accepted, which was the documentary about...
Hilarious.
It's not hilarious. There was some funny moments.
There was some funny moments.
It was the educational documentary we had over there. We did Thor, Love and Thunder, and then we did something else, which I didn't write down. I don't know why it's not on my notes. What else did we do?
We also been assigned something.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah, because I assigned you Accepted, and we were assigned...
Oh my gosh, this is not good for the brand. This makes it seem like this is embarrassing. We have no idea what's going on or what we're doing. Hey, pull up your notes. How about that?
I'm doing that right now.
We are
assigned a film called Clue. Mm. So of really course. Not that different from Thor and Accepted.
Sean Omrig's Clue. He had us watch Clue over there. Now, I spoke with our assigner as well as our decider yesterday, Brian. I was on the phone.
We have an assigned topic this
for
week.
For over an hour with the two of them collectively. I should have done that. Grouped them together. Just talked to them, banged them both out at one time.
That's insulting.
Yeah, very, very insulting.
I don't think they have anything to do with
the very nice conversation with Jonathan Mooser, who brought us our topic this week, the top five movies, best movies that have been affected by canceled talent.
Wordy, verbose.
Yeah. But it's definitely an interesting topic and conversation that we will have once we get to that episode. And then Josh.
What if we had the power to uncancel?
Josh, that'd be interesting. Josh Butler. I think we'd be canceled for uncanceling the wrong people. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Josh Butler assigned us a.
What's so bad about Harvey Weinstein?
Josh Butler assigned us a movie, Antiviral.
Indeed.
Which was an interesting movie, a David Cronenberg's production. Because he produced Brandon Cronenberg, who is his son, and his son made this movie called Antiviral with Landry Jones. What's his name?
Caleb Landry Jones. Yeah.
Love that guy. Love him. And we'll be
Antiviral
talking.
Antiviral is a real crowd pleaser.
We'll be talking a little bit about that. Now there was a little bit of confusion, as is the case sometimes. And Josh and I, we worked it out. Everything was fine. Josh is a really, really good guy. Great supportive listener, and he was helping with groupers way back in the day. He's been around for a long time. He's been supporting the program for a long time. But a lot of emails back and forth, Brian. I do a whole lot of emails with the listeners. I'd say I probably talk to maybe 15% of our listeners via email or in person.
What do you get more of like over the course of a month? Emails from various assigners and deciders or emails from Giovanni?
Giovanni.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So Josh had assigned us a very different movie, and then he followed it up with, my next movie might be Antiviral, and I took that as law. I didn't read too good, and I just added to the list. So I should not be admitting any of this, but he's fine with us talking about Antiviral sooner than later, but we'll be getting to Josh's other pick, which is related to Tex Montana, which you absolutely love.
I enjoy it.
But it's a very different movie than Tex Montana, which is not a real movie that Josh had us watch about 8 months
Feels
ago.
Feels like a real movie.
And then
it has a plot.
And then Jonathan Mooser and I had a very, very interesting conversation about canceled people and canceled culture and movies that have been affected by them. And it'll be good. I'm excited to talk to you about it. So,
sweet.
Let's get to.
I'm looking at the title of this episode in Avery's notes. Now, are you planning on talking Mad God? Because I did not mention that at the top.
No, I'll be talking about Mad God next week. Okay. Mad God needs to be talked about sooner than later. Here was my plan for Mad God was I was going to have you watch it, which you absolutely should.
Okay.
And then the two of us could discuss it together. Okay. However, looks like I lost at gambling again, which I have problems with.
I'm back on a streak.
I have massive issues with. All right, let's just get to this. All right, so pause a flurry, whatever it is.
You're both on wrong. You're wrong on both counts.
That new absurd children's cat kung fu farting movie. That we've all been subjected to the trailer if you go to see movies.
You really encapsulated it well.
31% is what I said. You said something absurd like 85 or 75 or
65. Or something.
Anyways, you won.
I did.
Here's the thing.
What's that?
How many people, it's a big giant release, that movie, right?
Seems like it.
How many critics usually weigh in on the Rotten Tomatoes for big giant releases that are released?
For a film that's in 1,000 theaters or more, yeah, you'll at least 100. Probably closer to 150 or two.
38 people slunk out of bed to look at this
38
thing.
Reviews?
38 reviews. So I feel like this
can change.
Default. I feel like this should be disqualified.
I disagree.
I don't know if enough people actually weighed in. It seems to me like all the people
to get a consensus.
Like the 62 other critics to bring it up to like your 100, which you kind of set the bar for just moments ago in verbalizing that. I believe that them not watching it is a negative review, right? Like they preconceived notions.
Oh, I disagree with that.
So that would bring it down to about 15%. I think making me the winner.
I can't look
38 reviews.
I can't look at Rotten Tomatoes because
38 reviews.
We'll get to it.
All right. And a little bit of cleanup here.
Yes.
It happens sometimes.
Hey, we got to talk about Final Destination 2.
Yeah, we do.
It went semi seamlessly.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
What we're talking about is our last, the most recent live watch along that we did with the Film Vault.
That was enjoyable.
We did it outside. We did Final Destination 2. I had already seen Final Destination 1 because I'm a crazy person. So I sacrificed lots of sleep to make sure that I wasn't going to miss anything. And I would have missed nothing.
You really missed nothing.
They set up all the rules in the second one. But we did it outside. It didn't rain on us. We used lavaliers, which sounded pretty good. Everything worked for the most part. We had some power issues with those lavaliers, which I've ironed out for the next time.
Every issue that popped up, we're able to address pretty quickly, including for some reason, half our connected devices worked and half just simply would not connect to Wi-Fi.
And we downloaded
the film and
personal volume issues from my player. It wasn't very loud.
I got to
get a preamp, I guess, so that we'll be able to plug that in and have more control over the volume because my little device doesn't go very, very loud. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was more comfortable than we've ever been, I think. And as far as just like outside on the couch, we're going to be moving to my studios over in my neck of the woods here once it's not so blistering hot, because I'm not going to subject you to the heat of my garage.
Yeah, well, next month will be August. It's still pretty fucking hot.
Yeah. So it's probably September or maybe as late as October, we'll start doing it. And then you're just going to have to bundle up because it gets cold in the winter. You know, it's not insulated out there, but we got a big TV and a good setup.
In the garage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Comfortable chairs.
We'll turn on a heat lamp and asphyxiate ourselves.
We could do that.
I still think about that from that weird random documentary called Tim's Vermeer. Mm. Remember the one guy was trying to recreate Vermeer painting?
I had a hard time with the guy's accent.
You didn't? You did or did not?
Did. I did not. I don't know. Okay.
At one point, he was
doing it a lot
in his garage and he had a heat lamp going and he got lightheaded.
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
No, you're not.
You know, they have these cool little things like at the hardware stores where you can, I know to many of you who know about these things, you're like, you know, what an idiot Anderson is, but they're just like little heat rays that you plug direct, you hook the hose directly up to a propane tank and you got heat right there from the propane tank.
It's like a grill or a radiator type thing, right?
It's almost like those work lamps that you have see and you plug in for light, but there's not light. It's heat coming out.
Yeah, it's like the old school things you see in LA in the bathroom. I have one that doesn't work. The radiator grill.
Yeah. You know, I used to have one growing up when I was a kid and I get out of the shower and I always flick water on it and it sizzles. Yeah, so much fun. But where are we going with that?
Should have flicked oil on it.
No, that would cause fire.
That would be a terrible thing. We were talking about Final Destination 2, and you had to clean up some things.
Oh, I have a space heater, too, so we'll be fine. So we're terrible at promoting. I like to think that we're getting better, but we forgot to even let everyone know on last week's show that we're going to be doing it, getting back together just 2 days later to watch Final Destination. But yeah. A lot of pabbiness went on with me because I get concerned with people losing their heads and losing their lives and sudden violence. So I was covering my face.
There was sudden and stunning violence.
And now a number of you who signed up for that level, anyone can do it over the old Patreon there for $10 a month. You get everything plus the monthly live watch link, and you can watch along with us live, or you can watch at your discretion, whatever you like. There's a YouTube clip link that you get with
private.
What's cool is it's a private link, and it also has all of the discussion
live.
So it goes right along. So it's as though you're sitting there. You can't
interact. You can watch others.
But it's all there. Yeah.
I never got to even ask you, did you enjoy Final Destination 2?
It was all right. I liked the first one more.
No, you did not.
I did.
You liked the first one better?
I liked learning the rules and watching the guy try to defeat
it. What about the dentist?
The dentist wasn't that great. I didn't understand your love for the dentist.
And the pain of glass. Oh, so good. The pane of glass.
We might go back to that well sooner than later.
I love it.
There's like three others that we have to get through. So
they get better.
Hey, it seems like the listeners who were involved really enjoyed it and they want more Final Destination. So we'll figure that out for next month. Also, it was brought to my attention by a listener, friend of the program, Andrew Martin, that I fucked up pretty good, which happens.
Oh.
We have so many lists week in, week out. I do 5 to 10 on my list. There's a lot of ties.
We're more incorrect than we are correct.
Probably, between 200, safe to say 250 to 300 picks per year, right? And well, every now and again, I fuck up.
50 lists times 5, yeah.
And a couple weeks ago, when we were doing sophomore efforts, I had Steven Soderbergh's King of the Hill on my list, and that turns out to be his junior effort. I had forgotten about Kafka somehow. And that's just me going off of the top of my head rather than doing my diligent research.
Good for you.
And I forget about Kafka because Kafka is not very good. Yeah, that's my opinion. But he did Sex, Lies, and Videotape, followed up by Kafka, and then King of the Hill. But you know what?
What's that?
Silver lining. I got an excuse and a chance to talk about King of the Hill, Steven Soderbergh's forgotten King of the Hill, which is a fantastic, rich period piece. Yeah, so to the point where a number of people watched it and let me know that they really enjoyed it and it was off their radar. So
what are you going to replace it with? Because now you got to replace. Now you have an empty spot.
I don't want to do that. I should have done this. I should have done this.
You got time. We'll wait. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's not it. That's aborted movies. I'll just go Slacker. I mean, Slacker was right there anyways. I wanted to do Slacker, and Slacker it is. All right.
Why don't you...
Elephant Man could have been on there.
No, could
have. I had some great also-rans. You know what? I'll make up for it. Here's a quick little rundown of also-rans for sophomore efforts. Fast Five. No, that's Fan Fiction. Elephant Man, Raising Arizona, The Graduate, Take Shelter, Slacker, which is now my official number 5.
I'm shocked Raising Arizona wasn't on your actual list.
Blue Ruin, The City of Lost Children, Lady Bird, Elysium, About a Boy, Boogie Nights.
Elysium.
High Plains Drifter, Clint Eastwood's second directed film. The Evil Dead, Snatch, The Deer Hunter, Reservoir Dogs, and/or Pulp Fiction.
Oh, because you're counting my best friend's birthday. Yeah,
that's right. The Road Warrior, Adaptation, Buzzard, Days of Heaven, Shame, Requiem for a Dream, Shaun of the Dead, Jaws, and Seven. These are all very good sophomore efforts. Did I say the elephant?
Tarantino, he does throw away stuff a lot, often when it's part of a compilation. He should do like My Best Friend's Birthday, but for like Netflix or something, because Netflix movies are entirely disposable. You know what I mean? He doesn't put his heart and soul into it. Just give it a little refresh.
Very dismissive. And thanks to Robert Jarosinski once again for giving us that directorial sophomore efforts as part of the decider. Mm-hmm. I actually had drinks with Robert not there long after. And we didn't even talk about the list. We were talking about business and all sorts of things. Great guy. Great guy out there in Madison, Wisconsin.
How about that?
Robert.
So you're a professor? Right. What do you do out there besides go to the university?
He works on films, Brian.
Okay.
He's in the Madison industry. He's making movies. Yeah, you remember I told you about the horror film that he's working on. All right. What else? One last final thing, I guess.
What do you got?
Feels. Shout out to Feels. We'll do a read for them later. And I'd like to say hello to listener Pika Snipe, also known as AJ, who's going through some tough times.
Oh, sure. What's up with AJ?
He's going through a rough patch. Kids stuff, relationship stuff.
Oh, sorry, AJ.
Feel better, bud.
Sorry you have to be subjected to the show after all that.
I know. All right, where are we starting?
Hard what
are we
doing? Fair. You're going to read Fan Fiction.
No, you are.
No, you are.
No, it was sent to us, both of us, and I just done a lot of talking.
That's not how it works.
I do a whole lot of preamble for this show.
I'm assigning you Fan Fiction.
Well, you don't... Oh, okay. Is that your assignment? Here we go. Fan Fiction. Guys, listen to this. Did you hear what just happened? Did you hear? All right.
I still have a movie to assign you.
No. Well, then you read Fan Fiction. Come on.
Mitch Burns says, I know Avery isn't there. I sent this to Brian as well if you want him to read it, as I'm sure you've done most of the talking by now.
That he did not say that at all.
It says it right there at the top of the fucking
Go ahead.
Email.
Go ahead.
This is from, hold on a second. Is it? Oh, man. I don't understand the formatting here.
Oh, my goodness, Brian.
Is this Mitch saying this? The black phone was rentable on streaming?
Yes.
Okay. Tyler Durden and ID Heretic on Reddit both gave the black phone terrible reviews, the latter calling it a waste of everyone's time, which is crazy to me because I fucking loved it. This is Mitch speaking, but I'm a horror fan. Here's Ludwig van Bacon's review from Twitter. I was excited for the black phone after seeing it hyped up by everyone. There are so many loose ends that never get tied up. It's very straightforward. Ethan Hawke was great, but was not given much to do. 6 out of 10, according to Ludwig, contributor to the show. Johnny Pomato coming at us with, I'm reading this verbatim, with another early review on Facebook.
You want to add some editorial?
I'm not editorializing is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. That's what you're supposed to do.
Saw George Miller's new film, 3,000 Years of Longing, for a second time. Holy crap. That's 6,000 years of longing. 6 weeks before its release. Before it releases, it's simultaneously intimate and epic, with Idris Elba's Genie telling his life story to Tilda Swinton, his latest lamp rubber. Kind of like Before Sunrise, but with a genie. This film is visually inventive and very entertaining, though it does have a bit of a misguided final act. Still quite enchanted by it. Miller could have done anything after Fury Road, and I kind of love that he picked this, a film difficult to market and for a limited audience, but one that he is clearly passionate about. Curious as to how this is received. Might have some crossover appeal with another heady spectacle, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Mm.
That's the most I've read since I read my audiobook.
Is that true?
Out loud, yeah, for sure. J.R. Lidgett on Facebook.
You're doing great, buddy.
Thank you. He saw Where the Crawdads Sing, really enjoyed the book, but the film felt like a Lifetime/Hallmark movie with a slightly larger budget. That's really not, that's really a condemnation. I feel like if I went in not knowing the plot, it would have at least been interesting, but fell flat on the screen. That is the common, this is me editorializing now, that is the common lament of adapting books to the screen, because of course you have to compress 300 pages into an hour and a half or whatever it is, and that's where you get high melodrama. Kimothy 9432 on Reddit says, something possessed me to watch Persuasion, and welp, I think Anderson has ruined Dakota Johnson for me. That and the movie was just horrifically bad.
I don't know. I feel unfair because I've never met Dakota Johnson, and I'm going off of things that I've seen her do.
I'm just going off of her work as presented on the screen.
She's in The Vortex, and she was actually good in Cha-Cha Real Smooth. For the first couple of acts, and then it kind of wore.
Energy Turtle on Twitter says, Mean Girls, wow. It's been a while since I saw Wowie. Wow. Wowie. This movie would not fly today.
Mm.
I don't know. Is that true?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised when I read that as well. I don't know. I mean, everything wouldn't fly today. There's very few things. You know what? I'm going to make a movie, and it's just going to be some milk next to some toast. It's going to be 2 hours.
It's going to be milk toast.
It's going to be critic proof. Can't fuck with this. It's
called milk toast.
Yeah, that's why it's milk and toast next to each other, Brad.
This is something I should know, but I'm realizing now I don't.
No, you don't.
Milk toast is actually spelled M-I-L-Q-U-E, and like milk.
It's French-Canadian.
Is it?
I don't know. It sounds like it.
I have no idea.
It sounds as though. Don't make me go, Brian.
Don't
make me go.
Whatever Let's you get do. Right into it. Don't make me go.
Let's get right into the newest release that we'll be covering today. Don't Make Me Go. Take it away, Bri.
Don't Make Me Go is the 2022 film directed by Hannah Marks, starring John Cho and Mia Isaac. Script by Vera Herbert was on. Oh, I have that printed wrong. It was on the 2012 blacklist. 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. On the 2012 blacklist, that is a list of unproduced scripts that they deem the best in the industry, I guess.
Yes, Franklin runs that.
Franklin Leonard, that's right. 54% of Rotten Tomatoes. Surprising. I did not find this to be a 54% movie.
It's 54?
Yeah.
Oh, shocking. Can we please just
There's only 30
rotten
reviews.
Goddamn tomatoes? Are there only 30 reviews?
I have no idea. I didn't look.
What is it? What is the score?
54.
The
It puts it in the Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes. Needs to suck it. All right, we need to stop.
No, they are just relying. Realize they're just reporting what other people are saying. They're just aggregating.
Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah, they're not reviewing a film. They're just taking all the reviews.
Oh, is that how it works? Yeah, it's not like one mastermind, Wizard of Oz type Rotten Tomato Man.
That's a common misconception.
I thought it was a man with a giant tomato head sitting behind a curtain, watching all the movies at once, giving his opinions.
It's not that at all.
No, I'm saying that the way that they pick the critics, I don't think that they pick.
I see. Representative.
And then the way that they just let, 38 of them review a brand new movie and then they call that a consensus, it's not cool. All right. Cause this is not a, what are you 50? You know how many people are not going to see this movie because they see the Rotten Tomato score and how foolish that is?
That was almost me.
Probably was. No, it wasn't. Did you know the score before or after?
Think after. No, maybe Derek.
Oh, Brian.
I think maybe Derek.
What's the Rotten Tomato? I think I like this movie. I'm on the fence though. Let's see.
I was enjoying it.
I need a nudge.
I said to myself, am I really enjoying this? And I looked and I'm like, no, I'm not.
How'd you do with this one, Brian? We'll get to the plot and we'll get to the execution and all that here in a moment. But how'd you do with it? You do okay with it, bud?
Because
of the subject matter?
Yeah, you know what? Hold on a second. I wrote this down.
You gotta read Rotten Tomatoes, or what do you rely on more? Rotten Tomatoes or your own notes? Like, what do you find to be more?
Well, my own notes are a transcript.
A transcript of Rotten Tomatoes.
Just word for word.
Can I just voice my opinion here momentarily? I am so goddamn tired of living around people who think they know shit, and I'm one of them, and I got to live with
you
myself all the time.
Coming over
but
here once a
at
week.
Least I have my own fucking thoughts and my own beliefs, which change sometimes, But there are so many people that make a fucking living by figuring out what other people like and what other people think.
Buddy, you're looking at them.
And just, what was that one with Richard Kind? What we saw recently where he's like, that's exactly what I thought. That's exact.
Yeah. He was moderating. It was the TikTok boom?
TikTok boom.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I said TikTok boom because there's a documentary from Sundance. It's called TikTok boom.
Very, very, so many people are just,
that's
they
exactly
don't know.
Right. I was going to say that.
It's a great example of, all right. So anyways, I'm not going to, die on the hill for Don't Make Me Go. As much as I liked it, I'm not going to freak the fuck out, but it is sometimes shocking.
It is shocking. This is a much better movie than 54%. I think I have it at like maybe 3 stars. Like it's an enjoyable,
I'd say
jaunty little number.
Jaunty little number.
That's right.
So the storyline is this, and the reason why I asked my buddy Brian here if he did okay with it is John Cho is a single father, and his daughter Wally, she's 15 years old, about to turn 16, and there's some strife. It's the typical paint by numbers relationship with a single dad and his teenage daughter. She's got a guy that she likes who's probably just drunk all the time and taking advantage. And dad's trying to protect her from that, but she knows best because she's a teenager. Dad needs to go see a doctor, a specialist. And early in the film, we learn that he has a tumor at the base of his skull. That's a bone tumor, but it's affecting his brain. And he's given
a bone tumor.
That's what I said.
I know.
And he's given two options. One, to go on the operating table, and he's got a 20% chance of living. Or he does nothing, and he has about a year left. And he decides to take the safe bet, which is at least a year or something. And he doesn't tell his daughter, but he says, hey, you know what, honey? You're grounded because I caught you lying about where you were. And we're going on a road trip to my college, 20-year college graduation, and I'm dragging you with me. And she's very opposed to it. Mm-hmm. And then they make a deal that she gets to learn to drive a little bit along the way. So now they're stuck together, and it's like a road trip, odd couple.
We should point out the mom is not in the picture.
I said single dad.
We find out what happened to mom. Things are revealed. I thought that was artfully done. There are some really good things in this movie, more good than bad. It's funny because you asked how I did, implying that, it's emotional, it's about cancer, et cetera, fathers and daughters. That was the only part I thought that really missed the mark. Like, that just didn't land for me. The father, the emotional cancer, not cancer journey. It's not what it's about.
I think that was a plot device to show these two having to go through like speed dating almost.
I totally
with
agree.
The father-daughter relationship.
I totally agree, but I think they shortchanged that part a little bit. It didn't have the emotional wallop that it could have.
By the end, it got me a little bit. I wasn't ugly crying or anything, but I was.
Well, we should just briefly
skirt.
Address the end and just say, no. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, neither did I.
Okay.
And, that's a testament to this.
Idiot.
Because the first 20 minutes of this movie, I almost turned it off. I'm like, I know exactly what this movie is, and it's doing exactly what I think it's going to do at every turn, each scene.
It's telegraphed. Pretty by the numbers.
And you know what kept me involved was John Cho, who's great. He's fantastic. So likable, and he chews the scenery.
Mia Isaac.
And Mia Isaac was fantastic as well. And, it was directed well. It wasn't like, knocking your socks off or anything, but it kept you engaged. It opened up with a nice little bit of comedy because this movie is heavy butterflies because it's told.
What does that mean?
More from the young daughter's perspective.
She's the narrator.
And yes. And
which is funny because you get a lot with just the dad.
And there is a lot with just the dad, but yeah, it is more her story than his. She is the narrator. And from the get-go, like, there's just butterfly symbols everywhere in this movie. Like when he's going for the MRI, course. There's stickers of butterflies. Right. There's butterflies all over her house, all over her room.
Right.
But it's soft-pedaled, heavy movie making, right?
Yeah. No, I agree.
Heavy subject matter. But it kept me engaged because of their relationship. They had a lot of great chemistry on screen. I really liked the two of them. And by the end, Brian's right. Like it didn't go exactly where you thought it would go.
The movie, you alluded to is 100% correct. The movie has potential for heavy drama, but it really does at least a decent job of keeping a foot in both arenas, right?
And it opens up with him taking his daughter to a nude beach by a mistake. And it's funny, like
it's
full
irreverent.
Frontal. It lets you know that it's R-rated. It's going to be funny. It's going to, have a sense of humor about it.
It's irreverent.
Yeah. And I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. So I liked it too. 54%. Now there's something like they go to Vegas and they're gambling at the roulette table. And that's a little telegraphed, a little on the nose. And you can kind of see the foreshadowing there and what's going to come of that.
It feels a little young adult-y at times.
Well, I mean, that's what it is, right?
Is it?
I think it's meant to be.
It's not like adapted from a book. It's an original screenplay.
It's told from her point of view, though, and she's a young adult.
That's a good point.
And I should say that this was a movie made, directed by an actress who's also in this. She played Tessa. I don't remember Tessa in this.
Oh, movie. No. She was the makeup girl on the video. Hi, I'm Tessa. I'm here with another makeup tutorial.
In the very beginning.
Because I recognize when you hear the name like Tessa or Atticus, I would imagine your like ears perk up and you're like, oh, well, who's this?
My ears never perk. Unless Mitch Burns is talking about his son Atticus, who's also the same age as my Atticus. Oh, very odd. Very odd.
This is a real blending of genres. It's a coming-of-age film. Mm-hmm. It's a buddy film. It's a road trip film. Mm-hmm. It's all those things.
I was expecting, and I do this a lot with movies, Brian.
If you mentioned streaming on Prime.
Yes, streaming on Prime. I would say give this thing a shot. Watch it with a significant other and enjoy yourself.
It goes down smooth.
As
one host of the show would say.
And it's a walk a mile in the shoes that hopefully you never have to walk in. There's a lot of tragedy here, but it's not ugly crying. It's not a bummer. It's actually an uplifting movie, which for this kind of subject matter is rare, I think. And it's artfully done for the most part. It's not going to be up for awards, but it's not 54%.
No, it's an above average movie by any objective
standard. I'd say it's a solid 4-star movie.
I have a 3, but we can meet in the middle.
It's the kind of movie that comes out 10 years ago. Mm. It would not be up for anything either because there's an Asian man at the center, but
an Asian girl.
Let's say Dustin Hoffman's in this 20 years ago. This is like an Academy Award winning movie.
It's got a little Rain Man to it.
But I'm saying, like...
Yes. I understand what you're saying.
I move, and I always do that, but movies have come a long way.
You're right. Well, it's funny because the script was written 10 years ago. It was on the black... Well, it was on the blacklist 10 years ago. God knows when it was actually written. So, yeah, it's got a little throwback feel to it.
I'm curious. After the program's over, I'm going to check out that old Rotten Tomatoes and try and figure out what the critics have a problem with here. I think they're racist.
That could be it.
Yeah. John Cho.
There's not much to not like about this movie.
All right, let's move on. What are we going to do next, Bri? What do we got? We got to do a little
We got a heavy movie and we got a very light film.
I say we do a little breaky-reaky.
Oh, we're taking a break?
Yeah, do a little feelsy-wheelsies.
All right. You can talk feels, not actually take. I can take some feels. Right?
I would like to take some feels. Let me tell you what. I'll do a little feelsies right now. Take a little feel.
Do I need to find the copy?
Yeah, bring up the copy while I fade us out here.
Feels.
Feels, yes. We'll be right back.
I know we're not supposed to play favorites, and we do this a bit every time, but Feels is... We made a pledge to each other and to the listeners a long time ago. Like, we'd really only like to, you know, talk about products on the show that we actually have some experience with, maybe we like or we use. And I can say for myself, and I think for Anderson too, Feels is a bit of a game changer.
Yeah, I'm not capable of, you know, doing voice work and saying I like something if I don't. It's just not, I can't. I mean, I think you know that about me. That's one of my many, many faults.
One of your flaws, yes.
That's one of the reasons why I'm sitting at the table with you rather than actually running a company, because I cannot.
Wait, I'm sitting at the table with you.
I know. And you don't have that problem. So
here we are.
Feels is one of the good ones. It's CBD. It's
premium CBD.
Really effective CBD. I used it just a couple days ago. I was really having an anxiety-ridden morning.
Really?
Yeah, to the point that I got so upset, Brian.
Everything all right?
I got so upset. I didn't know I could do this. I've been working out a little bit, you know what I'm saying? And a little stronger than I was maybe last summer. I was wearing a button-up like shirt with Marlins stitched into it.
You broke a plate in half.
I took the shirt. I was so upset about something. Mm-hmm. And I pulled on either side.
Hulk
ripped
Hogan style?
Immediately, right down the middle. The collar, right. I just shredded the thing.
What are you going
right
to do, brother?
And I'm like, that is a sign that I need to have me a little mints CBD.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene.
From Feels. It was upsetting. That's it was crazy. Absurd. Jillian saw me do it. And she's like, what are you doing? And she called me the Hulk, but she meant the green one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not even Hulkamania?
And I'm like, honey, I'm sorry. Give me 20 minutes. And I went and I took a Feels CBD mint.
It does help with anxiety.
Oh, my God. It was 20 minutes later, I'm relaxing and focused and working on something.
I don't mean to one-up you, but I do use Feels every single night to ease myself to sleep. It is a mild effect, and it just puts you right in that headspace.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
It's great stuff. Yeah, and right now, you know, I know a lot of you listeners probably I've said this before, I'm curious about the old CBD. Like, what can it do for me? Well, you hear what it does for Brian and I, and here's your opportunity to make it do something for you.
Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/TFE, and you get 50% off your first order with free shipping, by the way. That's feals.com/TFE to become a member. Get that 50% automatically taken off your first order with the free shipping. Feels.com/TFV. Let me sleep instead. Okay, we put it off long enough. I say we dive into Antiviral.
Antiviral.
Antiviral is a 2012 film. Oh, the same year the other script is written. Written and directed by Brandon Cronenberg. This is starring Caleb Landry Jones, Sarah Gadon. Is it Gadon? Gadsden? I thought it was Gadsden. Did I fuck that up? Malcolm McDowell is also in this film. Let me look up real quick.
Looks like they had Malcolm for a day.
Is it Sarah? I feel like it's Gadsden. Did I fuck that up?
I don't know.
66% of Rotten Tomatoes. You can rent this across multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Cronenberg, the son of David Cronenberg.
Yes. It's been established. Hannah Geist, Brad.
Hannah Geist.
Mm-hmm.
Meet.
Who are you looking for now here?
The girl who played Hannah Geist.
Sarah Gadon.
It's Gadon.
Gadon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good, I didn't fuck it up. All right. This was assigned to us.
Yes. And I'm very happy to have seen this because of my love for Caleb Landry Jones. And also, you know, we all know about David Cronenberg and Brandon Cronenberg coming up in his shadow a little bit. And I saw Possessor, which I did not love earlier this year or last year at some point. And this is one that he made 10 years ago, which I had seen. You know, I knew of it because of Caleb Landry Jones and because obviously of Brandon. But I had not taken the dip because I didn't think I would enjoy it. And boy, I was right in not enjoying it. However,
did you admire it?
I admired some of it until the end, which we're not going to talk about. And we're not going to do a spoiler on this one, but it just kind of went to places that both Brandon and his father like to go, which is the very macabre, the very body horror, the very dark, the very like, ew, icky.
Okay, let's set up the plot.
But I almost said love the plot. I really do like some of the interesting things that he's doing with the symbolism and the parables and and all that stuff.
I think you and I are in lockstep on this because Antiviral takes place in a sort of alternate world where, well, maybe it's this world, but it's a sort of extreme fetish. There's extreme celebrity worship in this world, almost to the point of fetishization. Celebrities are so worshipped in this world, and it's our world, but it's less sort of like an alternative history. Celebrities are so worshipped in this universe that the people pay good money to contract the diseases that these celebrities have. If a celebrity has a certain condition, there are companies out there that will infect you with their virus.
With their herpes or...
whatever it is.
You know, it's funny.
You want to feel a deeper connection to that person that you know from movies or TV or whatever.
I had this thought, you know, during the whole COVID thing, and it's like, I wonder if there is anyone out there that's like, because we're all so connected and it's so weird. And I was wondering if anyone was excited to think that maybe they had Tom Hanks, you know, like some of
the
his,
strain of COVID.
It's like, we're all living within each other. There is that. It's a real thing with us.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that, because I did some research on this, and the story apparently came to Brandon Cronenberg when he was watching, I believe it was Jimmy Kimmel Live. And I think it was, who's the one from, oh fuck! I forget who it was. But it was a young girl, a young actress. Think who's the one from Pitch Perfect? From up in the air. You're bad with names. You don't even know.
Oh, I know who you're talking about, though. I love
Anna
her.
Kendrick.
Yes,
is an Anna Kendrick type. Could have been her. I forget. But she had a cold and she sneezed and she's like, oh god, if I sneeze again, I could infect everyone here in this audience. And the audience went nuts. Like, you know, they all cheered and applauded.
Yeah, get me sick.
And he was like, yeah, that is such a bizarre level of yeah. celebrity worship.
Yeah.
And that part, that element of this movie worked for me.
Which is most of the movie.
It is, but it's also married, intertwined inextricably with like this grotesque body horror. And that to me was just an unnecessary crutch. It was like, all right, I get it. You're trying to freak people out. I understand. It could have been in my opinion, a much more pointed satire, even along the lines of like Election or Idiocracy. Like, this could have been a really sharp satire, but instead it's gross and unsettling.
It's Cronenberg. And
yeah, but he's just...
It's interesting.
I don't know.
To me, what's more interesting than this movie, I talked a little bit about with Mr. Butler yesterday, Josh Butler, the guy that assigned us this movie, kind of, that Brandon Cronenberg, I don't know if I've ever seen a director's son or daughter or somebody following in the footsteps so lock and step
Van
as
Peebles.
Brandon is doing here with just trying to do an exact replica of what his father would do.
That's
if he was in charge.
What I was trying to say, like, I don't know that was necessary.
And a possessor, same thing. Like if you were to see 5 minutes of Antiviral, you'd be like, oh, that's a David Cronenberg movie. And you'd be like, oh no, that's his son. And it's interesting. And I stumbled across this in talking to Butler yesterday, is that David Cronenberg is kind of obsessed with the future, and he is obsessed with the future and technology and sentient machines and singularity and the consciousness living on. And it's almost like this is engineered for, because David Cronenberg just made
his
last
manifesting
movie.
Manifesting himself in his son, the filmmaker.
He just made his last movie in Crimes of the Future. I would almost guarantee that he's not going to make another movie. Like, he's 80 years old. He said that he got dragged out of bed for that one. He didn't even want to direct that one. His son's going to continue to make the David Cronenberg type movies as Brandon Cronenberg. And it's like, he's going to, now is Brandon going to have another movie? I don't know if we need these types of movies done that way, because you're absolutely right. There was something here. There was a germ that could have been something remarkable.
There is a germ of a great movie.
The best thing to come out of this movie for me was a line that one of the other characters, the lesser characters, said when talking about celebrities. And he said, celebrities aren't people. They're a group hallucinations. Mm. And I found that just kind of a genius line right there.
There's some sharp writing in this movie. I wrote down the quote I can't say too much, but at one point our main character becomes infected with something, and he's worried that the corporation is going to hunt him down, right, and like snuff him out or whatever. And one of the guys says, "Hey, don't look so worried. You're a commodity."
Yeah,
and it's like, yeah, I've become the thing.
It's almost like Jurassic Park, but with celebrity virus rather than dinosaurs running amok.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess so.
But yeah, that went where it was all building to, and the coup de grace, the climax of the movie. It was just like, okay, I guess there's some interesting shots with the contrast of the blood and the white, but it wasn't for me. But Caleb Landry Jones continues to just impress everything I see him in.
Perfect.
He was perfectly cast in this too, because his skin is just so pale white. He looks sickly to begin with.
He doesn't look well.
A lot of extreme close-ups on his.
Roy Bruno Best Room from
Three
Get
Billboards.
Out. Okay,
Get Out, and then Three Billboards is my favorite. And I was talking to Josh Butler about this too. Like, I want to see Caleb Landry Jones in Nitram, is what I saw just earlier this year, where he played it's a biopic of a despicable human being. He plays evil often, and I would like to see him play likable, because he's so goddamn likable in Three Billboards Outside Missouri, or outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yeah, the two roles, this and Get Out, that come to mind, is just so weird.
He's douchey.
He's extremely bizarre.
He's a dick.
He's not
and
nice.
He plays nice. So, and I also got to recount and have a good laugh about the scene Sam Rockwell and him shared with the ass kicking. One of the greatest ass kickings I've ever seen in any movie. My God, it was great. And Three Billboards.
You got to go back and watch.
You remember? He goes inside. No, he goes upstairs. Remember. Goes out the window, downstairs. A lot of stuff. All one take. So good. All right. But yeah, this is not a movie I can openly recommend, but I'm very happy to have it now in my canon.
Yes. Thank you, Josh Butler. If you want to assign us a film.
Yeah, you can do so over on the old Patreon. It's our top, second to highest tier. It's $25 a month for 6 months, and you get to assign us just about any goddamn movie
That's
you like.
That's the same price as the signer list.
Decider is double. It's $50 a month. Really? Brian doesn't know how things work. Yeah, because they get to decide an entire topic. That's and true. Have a domination.
And have their list read.
Oh, yeah. And like this week, Jonathan Moser's list, like he's got an intro to it, Brad. An intro.
I don't like that.
I love it. If I have glasses and I can read it, because my eyes have just over the last 3-4 weeks, like I don't know what the hell's happening.
What's going on with you?
I can barely see. I don't know. It's scary shit.
Do you have red rage? Are you on the road? Are you on
Roid rage?
Yeah, you're ripping off shirts.
Are you telling me that I look good? Look, or are you just going off of the stories that you heard about me ripping off shirts?
A little column A.
I told a story about Hulk rage that I had during our, during our fuels read. All right. I'll talk about it on the old After Disaster in case you're, I cut out the feels read for the Patreon. I don't want to shortchange people. I got so angry last week.
For our most valued listeners, you're going to tell them to go to another podcast.
That's what I just did. But I got so angry. I'll just tell you the quick aside that happened within the feels read. I got so angry, probably 5-6 days ago.
What are you doing? I
was in the middle of making something work that wasn't working, and I was wearing a button-up shirt that was open, and I took either side of the shirt and just screamed and pulled as hard as I could, and it ripped perfectly down the middle. I threw it away. I should have probably kept that thing.
You could have very easily stitched that.
And Jillian saw it, and I think part of her was kind of like impressed, but part of her was also very turned off. I'm sure that she was conflicted.
Well, that's the story of your relationship.
Let's move on to the assigned movie by Brian.
Yeah, buddy.
I decided to give you
a little gift.
He gave me a layup, which was nice. I got to admit, it was nice to settle in and watch something that I was never obsessed with. I was never obsessed with Beavis and Butthead.
Oh, it was a big deal. I'm quite a bit younger than you, and I was.
You're
a big,
not. I don't know why you go there.
Deal out of
You're
my young
like
life.
4.5, 5 years younger than I am. I don't quite understand why you love to lean into that so much. Do you like to feel like you're the spring chicken? Is that what it is?
That's right.
Because you're bald and like, and you went bald at such a young age. It's rare
like
to
baby.
Be considered.
That's right. I've never been considered young, even when I was young.
You were buying beer at 14, right?
I was.
Old man Brian.
I did.
I could have if I YOLO'd.
If I YOLO'd that shit.
All right. Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. Not directed by Mike Judge. Directed by Albert Caleros and John Rice.
Correct.
Caleros.
You got it covered, boy.
Caleros, yeah. Caleros. Known for Enchantment and The Cleveland Show. They've been in the animation Futurama for a while now, so they're adept. They know how to do this thing. And we got our stars back, Brian, with the old Beavis, and we got Butthead over there. And this is a follow-up.
The titular stars.
Follow-up to their... Beavis and Butthead to America. When was that? 90.
Oh God, 97.
I can tell you this.
I couldn't even.
If you want more Beavis and Butthead, and you're worried about tonal shifts, and perhaps them evolving and changing over the decades, don't fret.
It's very true.
On brand. It's right back to where they started. It's like that friend that you pick right up where you left off. Like, there's no like, so where you been? How are things? What have you been doing lately? How do you fill your days? Like, there's none of that. You just start in with the jokes and the ball busting and the fun and the people watching right away. Like, you just, you know what I mean?
It's the old friend you haven't seen in a while, but you have a long shared history. Yeah. And the conversation is very easy.
There's no
96% of Rotten Tomatoes. You can stream this on Paramount Plus.
All right.
I signed up for that shit.
And
I gotta be honest, Anderson, I didn't take a lot of notes.
Yeah, I didn't take a ton of notes either. There's a couple things that are fun that they couldn't have done years ago, and that is Beavis and Butthead. So the story is Beavis and Butthead are brought here from 1997, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're now in 2022 as their 1997 selves, which are the selves that we last saw them. So they haven't aged at all. They haven't matured at all. They haven't learned anything.
That respect.
And I think but this is the one where they bring up the multiverse, right? And they ask about Spider-Man. Like, do you understand Spider-Man? No?
No, I think it was something else. Okay.
We saw that recently though, right?
Yeah, what was that?
Have you seen Spider-Man? And then they're like, no. I think it was this.
Okay.
Talking about multiverses. And watching them... try to understand
Siri.
White privilege was fucking glorious. How they took it and ran with it and in the wrong way. They didn't quite understand what... like
they
what,
were elated.
They were elated to figure out that they had the white privilege and they used it to their advantage. learning Siri and how you could pay for things with this phone device. They got the family that asked them to take a picture. This guy just gave me this phone. Realizing all these magical things you could do with these, that stuff was glorious. All of the misunderstandings to get them to ultimately space and the unit. This was definitely one because they went in the universe and the wormhole and all that stuff.
They encountered other versions of themselves.
They did. And this movie works on many levels. It is absolute and total throwaway, fun humor that's way more clever than it needs to be.
Indeed. This could have been Member Berries.
It was. I don't, you know what's a great point? It was Member Berries in the sense that it was them, for sure, but not Member Berries in the sense that.
No, it put them in a new environment with like new adventures and like encountering, having to. As themselves having to deal with, like you said, white privilege and iPhones.
You're absolutely right though. Like it didn't. I don't even know how you would do Member Berries with Beavis and Butthead unless they went back to their school, like you know, saw Mr. Anderson and like
watch
all that
videos.
Like they didn't do any of that. They just continued forward, which I absolutely appreciate in this world where Member Berries are kind of a sure bet, right?
It was very enjoyable. The alternate versions of themselves who they re-encounter several times, I found particularly delightful because they didn't change the characters at all aside from one key aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say they were smart Beavis and Butthead?
Yeah, I mean you can say that because
they were no different in any other way.
No, they actually use bigger words and whatnot.
No, that's a function of them being smart. Aside from that, they're just the same two.
Oh, they're still Beavis and Butthead. They're just an alternate version of them, which happens to be smart. Which,
yes, that word has two meanings.
This is enjoyable. Way more. I liked it way more than I thought I would.
I know, me too. I was a little afraid it was going to be Bill and Ted, which was fine, but it was like that kind of came and went.
Yeah,
and I laughed several times.
All right.
The entire film the entire plot is kicked off by a misunderstanding that they're going to have sex with an astronaut.
Yes.
Who decides they must come to space.
And it's one of those things where it's just like absurd misunderstandings and because they are so obsessed with phallic imagery and masturbation.
Oh, they're so good with the
docking. At a science fair, right?
Right.
And the astronaut sees them, and they're like, they've been doing it for 18 hours, just making the missile go in and out of the port because they're so simple minded. That's all they wanted to do. And they're like, and the astronaut's like, she says like, their intention, their focus is incredible. We've never seen anything like this. They need to be the ones who actually come to space with us and do this docking. And, as you might imagine, I'm watching it now where they're doing the docking. Yeah. And as you might imagine, the docking doesn't go quite as splendidly well when they're actually out there in the field doing it. It's good stuff. It's very good stuff. It's very enjoyable. And I as somebody who's admittedly not a giant Beavis and Butthead fan, but a fan of much of what Mike Judge has done over the years, but Beavis and Butthead was not my first choice. This hits all the right tones for me.
That's funny because I Beavis and Butthead were contenders for our upcoming Patreon episode, top five comedic TV characters.
Yes, which I have Ludwig von Bacon to thank for that because I had a conversation with him. We're collaborating on a shirt idea that I've had for bouncing around my head for a while, which is almost done. I'm pretty excited. I like the way it turned
out.
Ludwig van Beek, one of the finer artists that I know of, and he and I were talking. We shot the shit for like 45 minutes, probably. I never talked to that Ludwig van Beek. It was a first time.
His name Ludwig.
His name is not Ludwig van Beek.
That'd be weird.
His name's Justin. I hope he's okay with me saying that. But
Justin Van Bacon.
He's like, I would love you to one day do like, you know, top five TV characters. And I'm like, you know what? I love that idea.
Not bad.
So hey,
just
a
preview for you, Ludwig / Justin Van Bacon. There are many, many clips associated with my top five.
Brian can't handle his clips. So I'm a bit concerned. But here's the deal. We will be doing that. And I also have clips for many of mine. And I have something that it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting, to say the least, especially the way I went about one of my clips in particular. It was a fun exercise. We did top five comedic TV actors or characters, and I didn't really know where I was going to go. And it was a lot of pondering in the shower, on the road, thinking like,
I'm sure I've forgotten. You know what I mean? Are you living with regret?
What do you mean? Oh,
like I'm sure I've left.
I love mine so much, though. Like, there's really no.
It's true.
All right. Finally,
I'm
going to
enrage you.
What's that?
I'm going to enrage you.
I'm sure you will. Finally, before going, we'd be fools not to mention, I would be, I'd feel foolish anyways, not to mention the latest Bill Burr special, which is at Red Rocks. It's Bill Burr at Red Rocks. It's on the old Netflix. It's an hour and 22 minutes.
He's so good. He's the top. Did I ever tell you he wanted to be on the show?
No, I used to talk to him about being on the show. And we came close a few times, but... We just never got there. He might be too big now because I've been a giant Bill Burr fan since Carano turned me on to him because we used to get promotional shit. It's kind of a fun little story how I found Bill Burr. We used to get promotional CDs. I'm sure you still do at the Corolla, right? And I don't know.
Less so physical media. Yeah.
But I get stuff sent to my inbox, my actual mailbox at work at Loveline Westwood One Studios.
I remember, there was piles and boxes of discarded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it was, you know, I'd never look at. And for whatever reason, I got a Bill Burr CD sent to me, and I had never heard of him. And
Was he on Chappelle at that point?
His face bugged me. It was 2010, probably.
So I think he was.
I didn't like the look of his face. And I had a bucket, and there's an infamous bucket. Those who listen to After Disaster know Rune actually fucked with my bucket. Like his first week, he was like, it's where I kept all my CDs. And like, I just, instead of having a drawer, I had a bucket that I could move from studio to studio.
That's good.
And I had it sitting in there, and I don't know why. It just kind of fell in there, and I didn't take the time to throw it away. And then Carano, he came into my life right around then, and he saw that, and Carano knows a lot about comics. And
of course, he must have been familiar with Burr for 10 years.
He looked at it, and he saw that I had it. He's like, you should listen to that. I think you'd really like his style of comedy. So that made me very upset, and I don't like to be told what to do. So I sat in my bucket for another 6 months.
It was this close to being put into your CD player. Yeah, fuck that.
And then I was doing something. I was at work early, and I had to like do a bunch of setup. I'm like, I'll throw this fucking thing in the CD player before I throw it away. And within like maybe 2 minutes, like he just had me by the balls. And I'm like, holy shit, I love this guy. And I've listened to every single one of his podcasts. Like it's the only thing that I've kept up with all these years. I've listened to every single one. I got him booked on Loveline 2 or 3 times. We got to shoot the shit back and forth. I saw him over the Corolla thing. That was the first time I ever met him. We were about to do the film vault and he was wrapping up right before we talked hockey. He's just a good guy. I line up with him quite a bit on his takes and his comedy as well, obviously, to the point that I was watching his most recent one, which is very funny. There's something in there for just about everybody, I think. Doesn't matter your fucking politics. He's on both sides.
He gives it equally to both sides.
He busts. I mean, he's more liberal than especially living out here, but you know, he busts balls on both sides.
Yes,
he kind of opens up with that, which is a lot of fun. He makes a lot of sense. He talks about his evolution as a father, and I actually almost got a little bit choked up because I heard him saying something about it. His daughter said, which is sorry, Dada, which is when I put Atticus down a slide when he was too young and I wasn't allowed to go down with him. And then he got down to the bottom and it was a water slide and he was just saying sorry. He was crying and saying sorry because they thought he was being punished. Oh, it's the worst. Anyway, he gets into fatherhood a little bit, but not in it's just a really, really good. It's the most fun I've had since the last time I saw you. He was sitting there watching Bill Burr for an hour and 22 minutes.
How about that?
However, we were talking just a few weeks ago about kids flipping out about water bottle flipping. Remember? Do you recall?
Was that me?
You and I were talking about it.
I remember thinking it's no big deal because with the water, you know, a quarter full, it's bottom heavy. It's going to land on the right side.
He's got a bit about that.
Oh, really?
About how, different generations grew up with different things. And like, you know, you can't judge John Wayne. I'm not going to give away the bit, but he's talking about John Wayne grew up with this. And the kids that are growing up today are like fascinated by a water bottle. They'll spend, you know, hours trying to get it to stand up. And then when it does, they just lose their fucking mind. Right. He's like, so it was funny that we were just talking about it. Maybe I had heard him talk about that. And his voice is in my head quite a bit, but highly recommend. Mm-hmm. Also, just if you've never been to Red Rocks and you're curious as to what
I've
it looks
it's
like,
magnificent.
It is. Have you ever seen like a show like on?
I'm familiar. I've seen like
you've seen pictures and whatever.
Yeah, pictures and videos and whatever. But
I've seen three shows there, and they're like all the best shows I've ever seen. It's just the greatest. It's the fucking greatest. In fact, Ween, Primus, and the fellows from South Park are getting together to do a show at Red Rocks next month.
What are we doing here?
For the 25th anniversary of South Park.
No shit.
Because Trey and Matt
are,
and they're all like close. They love Ween. Ween's done a number of songs for him. So they're all playing Red Rocks.
But you got to go.
I know, right? I know.
You can make that work.
Talked to Jillian. She was into it. And then I told her tickets were like close to $200 pop. She's like, all right, we're not doing that.
You can scalp that shit.
It's upsetting that we're not booked to go there. Maybe we can still make that happen.
I think you can make it happen.
I don't know. I think it's coming right around the corner.
Let me, did I ever tell you the story about how my interaction with Billy?
Well, I mean, I know that you did Doug's Loves movie with him.
Yeah, so I've told the story.
He made fun of you. I listened to the episode.
I don't think he made fun of me.
Oh, he absolutely did.
What? Well, maybe he did, but the real rub was he fucked me on the on an answer. I knew the answer to a question, the Leonard Maltin game, and he was like, Paul Blart Mall Cop. I was like, no, Bill, it's not Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Oh, God, you're insufferable.
And so I was very angry, but I was playing it up for the stage, whatever. And after the end, I'm walking to my car, and here's Bill in his fancy car, just pulls up right in front of me and goes, hey, man, sorry about fucking you on stage there. I'm like, I don't care. He's like, oh, I like to do your podcast. I'm like, great. He's like, hey, email me the blank@blank.com.
So before that was when I met him at the Corolla Studios, and I was telling him about how we're about to do our top five, and we do it every week. We'd love to have you on. That was the first time I'd ever met him. He's like, yeah, absolutely. I think I was even texting back and forth with his manager at one point about ad. He's blowing up since then. He and Pokey are the Pokey, like the raw fish dish.
The dish.
Those are the only two things over the last 10 years that I've seen
early on
that I've seen blow up that I'm happy about. Yeah. I hate when things blow up. It make me upset. Like, why is that popular now? But Bill, I love seeing Billy. He's just such a funny, down to earth guy, and he's such a
he's a real
comedic
talent.
Nerd. He was talking on last week's podcast about how he left. He was at Largo, I think, last week. He plays out here locally all the time, and some woman. He's going out to the parking lot, much like he saw you in the parking lot, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to his car, and there's a woman and a man standing there, and she has her head down, and he goes, hey, how you doing? He thought that they were waiting for him for, autograph, or, do you like the show? And she, bowed her head. She goes, no, I did not. And then he just gave her a piece of his mind as he's walking to his car. And then the next day, the manager, general manager at the place or something, called him up and said, hey, Bill, I think you had a misunderstanding with that lady last night. That's not what she was saying at all. And Bill's like mortified. He's trying to find her now.
Oh no. What was she trying to say?
He thinks that she was trying to say, yes, she did enjoy the show. But a little thing like that, upsets him. And I so relate to that. I love that kind of, because how many, he's like top of, he's top three, top five comedians working today.
Easily.
Yeah. Like, how many would actually care about some woman in a parking lot who he misunderstood at a small little show that he did locally?
Yeah, to be obsessed with that.
And to be talking about it.
Oh, I forgot to tell you a story.
What?
I texted you and I never followed up.
Oh, no, about Nick Cage?
Yeah.
Who cares?
No, this is a good ending. You're going to like this. Okay, I'll preface it by saying, we're sitting. So I'm out to dinner with Christy.
Get your microphone in front of your face. Look at it. It's askew.
Out to dinner with Christy for a belated Father's Day. This is a week ago.
Yeah.
Not even. And maybe it was exactly.
Oh, at the thing that you didn't want to go to, but you went to because it was a dough and it wasn't one of your favorite bands.
It was lovely. Yeah. It was quite lovely. Okay. And we go to dinner first at Musso and Frank.
Who liked it more? Her or you?
Probably Christy.
Yeah.
God, they had Beatles and Frank Sinatra.
They had all these
Titans.
Different.
Titans of my love.
Quartet.
String quartet,
and they cover all of these popular bands. And Christy was telling Brian about all the different bands, all of his favorites, Oasis, Beatles. Yeah. Like
they have a Beatles night, fucking A. They have a Frank Sinatra night. Fuck, that sounds awesome. Those are all nights we can't go. So I got us Adele.
And then she ends up enjoying the Father's Day gift more than you.
I did.
Sounds about par.
I did enjoy it. That's it. We got to dinner beforehand to Musso and Frank. Classic.
Oldest restaurant in Hollywood.
Yes. As portrayed, it was another one.
Once upon a time in Hollywood. It's where he first meets Al Pacino.
There you go. So we're there. It's fantastic. It's lovely. The red booths. It's all very old school. Mm-hmm. And we get there when it opens. We actually got there 2 minutes before it opened. We're standing outside and the door opens. They let us in because things at 7 and dinner's at 5 or whatever. Anyway. We sit down in a little sweetheart booth, right? Just like a booth big enough for one person on one side, one person on the other side. There's a whole row of these. And we're sitting, Anderson, help me describe this, because Christy and I are sitting, as you and I are sitting, facing each other, and her back is to the front door. So people come in towards me, right? I can see people coming in to go see, they're behind me in the restaurant. And wouldn't you know it, a gentleman walks directly past us, towards me, but past us. And I'm like, that is fucking Nicolas Cage with flaming red hair. Like he had like full on dyed hair, possibly for a role, possibly because he's insane. And he goes, and I'm like, and I said to Christy, because she didn't see him as well, obviously. All she saw was a dude with the red hair.
Where is this story going? I could have summed it up with, I saw Nick Cage with red hair at Musso and Frank's. Next.
There's more to the story.
All right. Well, I mean, there's a lot of setup. Act one took 2 hours.
I wish Christy was here. I can call her real quick.
No, it's fine. You don't need to corroborate the story.
No, because you'll find out why. Because now she can see him, and she's led. That's 100% Nick Cage. He's maybe 15, 20 feet behind us at a booth with another nice young lady, and they're having dinner. Presumably, I can't see because they're behind me. And apparently, according to Christy, an aggressive patron, not associated with them, goes and sits at the booth and starts buddying up to Nick Cage.
People are the fucking worst. Leave him
starts
alone.
Buddying up to Nick Cage, and he's clearly uncomfortable, which maybe he would be anyway. I don't know the man, but clearly uncomfortable. And the manager came over and basically bounced the guy from their table.
Got to do that.
I got to call Christy.
Leave. No, it's fine. I believe it. What is she going to? She going to tell the same story? Just told, I don't. I can't. Yeah. I can't hear the remake. I can't hear the reboot of the story, Brian. But no, yeah, that happens. And people who want to be in the industry are so fucking obnoxious for the most part.
It really was. Like, it was brazen.
The number of stories I've heard of, like, you know, PAs who are working on a movie, and it's the first chance they get to go up to the star and talk about their script. It's just like, you're gross. You're fucking gross. Leave people alone. Can you imagine just sitting at a booth with Christy and all of a sudden some fucking third person sitting there trying to talk your ear off and sell you on something that you don't want to have anything to do with? The fucking worst. People.
That may have been people. That may have been me at Loveline.
That was absolutely
minus the
you.
Script. I never handed anyone a
No, you had
script.
Nothing to offer. You're just like, thumbs up.
Have you ever told this? No, never mind.
What's that? I'll tell the next episode. Who? What? With the what?
No, I can't do
it. No, come on. What did I tell? Brian, you're going to upset people.
I may have been a little too forward with a couple of. Never mind.
Guests, who?
No.
What were you trying to get them to do?
I wish they were guests.
Oh, who are you for?
This is out in the world.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
With celebs? Doing what?
I'm not proud of what I'm doing.
Trying to get them to do what? All right, on the next episode, Brian's going to come clean while looking out the window. All right, let's get out of here.
Come on. Let me... I'm looking up Nicolas Cage's tattoos because I recognize his face, but then I saw a big old tattoo on his arm. I'm like, well...
The Roadrunner?
I couldn't tell. He walked past me. No,
I've seen him a couple times. One time I was at that screening for Leaving Las Vegas. It was an early screening with Mike Figgis there. And then Nick Cage was there. And Jim Carrey was in the audience. It was a small little intimate setting. I've talked about that. I lit Patricia Arquette's cigarette because they were together at the time. That was a chance encounter. I had no idea. And then another time I was on Third Street Promenade. This is like 15, 20 years ago. He and his son were walking towards me. So, you know, it was a long walk. I got to walk towards them and observe. And Nick Cage's son had a very particular style, big belt buckle.
Oh, he's a big like goth guy, right?
I don't know. This is back then. He didn't look comfortable in his own skin. I can tell you that.
Thank you again to Josh Butler for signing us Antiviral. Thanks, Josh. We appreciate you being a Patreon member. Check out Candy Cigarette. They're our featured artist this week, and they are on AndersonBryan.com. If you want to find more information about them, AndersonAndBryan.com is a website. Should we do Amazon real quick? No, we'll do it next episode.
Next episode. I mean, next episode.
A lot of clips. Instagram is Anderson and Brian.
Clips
Facebook
are for the Patreon.
Right? And Twitter.
Settle down. You're not going to have clips for canceled talent.
I do.
Do you?
I have a lot of clips.
What? Brian, you have clips for both episodes?
Yes,
settle down with your clips.
I'm giving the listeners added value. Stories about Nick Cage,
can't argue
Bill Burr,
all right.
Clips. Thank you to all of our Patreon listeners, subscribers, supporters. Also, thank you, Giovanni, Jordan Wolf, Mitch Burns, and Mike Cole. We appreciate you guys. Avery's not here, so fuck his podcast. Until next time.
It's Invade
don't
the Decade.
That. Don't
it's Invade
that.
The Decade. It's a very
I
good
have
podcast.
Spoken.
What?
I have spoken.
We need to talk to Logan, too, see if there's anything more we can do for him.
Back.
I wonder how his Twitch is. Twitch. I want to do another plug for his Twitch. People should watch his Twitch.
Logan's available.
He is available, but he's out there, doing a Twitch feed on
this
finding a job.
This could be a Clockwork Orange situation.
I don't understand
Alex
that.
Alex comes home.
Oh, who's that? Munching on ticks of toast. All right, what happened to my snake? All right, let's go.
Till next time.
We know it for Vancouver.